Hi, I'm Kenny Mayne, and I'm here to talk to you about my new internet show, Main Street. You know, a wise man once said, you'd have to be an idiot not to watch Kenny Mayne and his new online show, Main Street. He then went on to say a few other wise things before coming back to the subject and angrily saying, let me stress again, you would have to be a real moron not to watch Kenny's show. Not my words, people. The wise man said all that.
Kenny Mayne stars as Kenny Mayne in his new internet show, Main Street, now playing on ESPN.com.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound. Like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. All right, Main Street. I don't think we've been promoting it enough. I think we might have to step it up. Really get it out there that this show's on there. So we're going to do our third podcast of the week. This was actually meant to be at the tail end of the second podcast, which was the Mike Lombardi one. We've done three this week. Cousin Sal did the lines on Tuesday. Talked to my buddy Gus about Rocky IV. We hashed that whole thing out. That was also on Tuesday. On Wednesday, we had Mike Lombardi from National Football Post. And then what we were going to do was at the tail end of the Mike Lombardi one, we thought, you know, I'd call my buddy Jacko. He's getting married this weekend. We talked to him, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Jacko deserves his own podcast. He's getting married in a couple days, and he's a BS Report staple. He's loved by millions. He's got an adoring throng of fans and groupies. And we decided, you know what? What the hell? We'll give Jacko his own podcast. So let's call him at work.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Johnny.
Hey. There he is.
What's happening?
What's going on, man?
How you feeling? The countdown's on.
It really is.
Thank God for the gay marriage rules.
Amen, brother. We're about 74 hours away from my being married.
Listen, if you want to back out, I support whatever decision you make.
Okay, I'm going to go to the airport right now and head to Brazil. What's a country that doesn't have an extradition treaty with the United States?
What was that Julia Roberts movie where she backs out?
The Runaway Bride?
Yeah. Maybe we should watch that on Friday night just to make sure you're committed to this.
Go get the DVD.
Yeah, this is pretty exciting. Yeah. You know, you have one heartbroken listener, Claire in Atlanta.
That's right, yeah.
Who really took it personally that we just casually mentioned that you're getting married.
As well, I'm still open to other possibilities. She's got 74 hours to get a hold of me, so.
And you can always
just kidding.
You can always remarry.
That's true. That's a good point.
So, do you want any advice? Do you want any marital advice? Do you want to know what you're headed for?
Please, yes. We're better to turn than to you.
Yeah. Well,
I love that subjective. Yeah.
Well, the first few months are going to be great.
Okay.
A lot of pressure is lifted. She'll be about as happy and gregarious and calm and relaxed as you've ever seen her.
Oh, that's good to know.
And then about maybe the 5-6 month mark. When's the first holiday? Well, your birthday's in July, so maybe that's when your family will see her. Then it'll start the whole, so when are you guys having kids?
Exactly, yeah.
And those questions start, and then it gets to the holiday season, and they keep asking. And then your new wife suddenly doesn't seem so calm and relaxed and
really
friendly
then it all
and happy
starts
to be
up again.
Yeah, and then she starts thinking, like, why do people keep asking me why I'm having kids? Am I missing out on something? Can I have kids? Should we try? And that becomes this whole, you know, mental labyrinth. And then you go through the process of deciding you want to have a kid. Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't happen right away. I've had some friends that struggled for 2-3 years trying to conceive. That brings a whole other level of, and then you have the kid. Well, first you go through the pregnancy, which is just a natural disaster.
Nightmare,
I mean, it's the Hindenburg of human relationships. Then you have the kid, and then life is just altered forever. So
it's done. Well,
the reason I'm telling you this is after you get married, I really want you to enjoy those next 6 months.
It would be funny if you turned it back to me and all you heard was a dial tone after that dejected monologue there. Yeah.
Well, it's good. I'm just preparing you. There's rough times down the road.
The sound of squealing tires.
Yeah. Toward the Mexican border.
Exactly.
No, it'll be good.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Now I'm the best man in this wedding.
You are.
Obviously I'm going to say something. Do you want, like...
That's the part I'm most nervous about, to be honest with you.
Do you want a short speech, a long speech? Do you want me to give, like, the equivalent of Obama's victory speech in Chicago?
I would. I'd like something very similar, yeah. My wedding will be held in a stadium just like that was, so it'll be very similar, you know.
Can I get the bulletproof thing around me as I'm giving the speech, secure?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get you the thing to read from, the teleprompter, you know. We'll get that going for you in bulletproof glass.
That provides a nice segue for us. We haven't talked since the election on the podcast. And, in fact, we talked about the election on the podcast, but that conversation mysteriously disappeared.
True.
We had a whole funny thing. You know, ESPN had rules. We were not allowed to talk about politics for the election, whatever.
It was like the Watergate. It was like the Watergate tapes. There was a sudden gap when it started the different talks about politics, right?
Yeah, I think it was almost 18 minutes, too.
Exactly.
We had a really funny conversation, too, about the, you know, how your life was kind of falling apart because the Yankees had gone in the tank.
Right.
The Republican Party was... You know, headed for a loss.
Headed for the tank, yeah.
And you were really down in the dumps.
I was.
And sadly, there's no video, audio evidence of it. But
no.
How are you feeling a month later?
No, surprisingly, I mean, I went through whatever stages, you know, I'm not sure what it's called, but they have this grief scale where you go through, like, you know, anger and bargaining.
The
seven stages, but there's a name for it. I don't know what the name of it is, but like the Heisenberg scale or something like that. But you go through all the levels of grief, and then, you know, you finally come to acceptance. Well, I went through it early because I could see the handwriting on the wall, and as much as I tried to delude myself into thinking otherwise, and maybe there'd be like a 1980 U.S. beats Russia miracle or Flutie to Phelan miracle, that wasn't really meant to be. So I kind of went through the stages of grief early. So by the time election night rolled around and I could see it was a foregone conclusion, I wasn't really, surprisingly, like, which is miraculous. Like, the next day I was like the most optimistic of all my dejected friends and family. Like, I was the most optimistic one of anybody, which is really, as one of my friends said, she's like, if you're the optimistic one, this really is the sign of the apocalypse. You know? It really is cause to fear, because I was like, it's all right, you know, everything's going to be okay. Talking other people off the ledge, and usually, like, I'm always threatening to go off and live in a cabin in the woods, so... which is what I threatened to do in 2004 if the Red Sox won the World Series and John Kerry got elected. I was just going to go live out in the woods like a hermit. But thankfully, only one of those things happened. So.
You know, and you're not even joking either. I think you really would have done that.
I would have gone and lived off the land, yeah. I would have been like a Ted Kaczynski character without the bombing. I mean, I wouldn't give anybody bombs, but I would have been like the Unabomber, like living off in a shack. Of course, I'm like a city boy. I couldn't really live out in the woods for more than like a minute, really. I'd live out in a shack that had satellite so I could still get the Yankees games.
I'd like to think that God maybe swung the election away from Kerry because he was worried about your own personal side.
I like to think I made a difference there, yeah, right.
Because if that had come, the Red Sox won on October 27th, and the election was the next week, that's about as tough of an eight-day stretch for Johnny as I think that ever could have happened.
That's a 1-2 punch. I mean, this year, like, I could, you know, I could see from basically about July that the Yankees weren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
And from around the same point in time, I could see that my electoral prospects weren't going anywhere either. So, you know, I was able to internalize the defeat a lot earlier. It wasn't like a 1-2 punch in the gut. You know, it was like I had some time to absorb it. So,
well, what do you think is going to be the Republican equivalent of spending $180 million at CC Sabathia to try to rally their fans back?
I don't know. I mean, these things are always cyclical. I mean, the party that is in the White House generally in the off-year election, if you don't lose Congress, you'll lose some seats. So, you know, I mean, Obama's wildly popular now, and understandably, he's the new guy on the block, and he's made some good moves in the transition and stuff. But, you know, he faces a myriad of problems.
Thank
you. So you would think that, you know, he's not going to be perfect on everything, and there'll be some missteps, and there's always a chance to come back, you know?
He's kind of like Donnie Walsh taking over the Knicks.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a nice spot to come into.
Yeah, that's true. Right.
You have potentially a lot of cap space. You have a very forgiving fan base, and really anything you do is going to be a step up.
I'm not going to go as far as to compare George W. Bush to Isaiah Thomas. But I didn't mean to either.
It's not an inept.
People could make that.
I don't want to make that either.
Right. But it's not ridiculous. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, he could turn things around, but still, like, you know, you don't figure the Knicks are going to compete for a championship in 2 years. Until they get LeBron, but, you know, continuing the analogy. But
although it will be weird if Bush moves to
upstate New York,
Westchester, New York, starts playing golf every day, and there's a mysterious overdose. That would be strange.
It would really tie it all together.
Yeah, but I do think it's a nice spot for a president to step into. I'm trying to think, like, I guess like Reagan. Maybe when you think about, like, what was the best time to become a president
after Carter.
Our lifetime, Reagan in 1980, the country was so bummed out, and really anything he was going to do was people were going to be fired up about.
That's true, but I mean, he ran into some. I mean, he did terribly in the 1982 congressional elections, and the country was still in a recession, and then it was after that he turned things around. So. Yeah, I mean, if I was a betting man right now, I mean, it's odd to bet on this now, but if you would like Obama's electoral prospects, certainly in 4 years, but you never know. I mean, things, you know, it's terrible to say, but you never knew anything like 9/11 was going to happen, so you just can't,
right. You
can't predict what's going to happen, you know, like what a president is going to face. And he right now thinks, like, everybody thinks it's the recession and economic downturn, which is true, but you know, you don't expect some crazy foreign policy thing to happen and some disaster could entail, and how he responds to that, you know, all those things will be very telling, you know.
Yeah, and there's some other parts to the presidency that would be interesting, like just having your kids in the limelight like that.
Yeah, there's a
strain on your marriage. Because he seems like a really, out of all the politicians we have, he's one of the more normal guys. Like,
yeah.
I can actually see us hanging out with him. It'll be interesting to see how he deals with that.
Like even a simple thing, like I've read about, he's really like addicted to his BlackBerry.
Yeah.
Like our friend Joe House, like he can't put down his BlackBerry.
Yeah.
And once you're president, you can't use a BlackBerry for security reasons because any foreign government could like hack into your BlackBerry in like a minute and a half. So he can't like use his BlackBerry anymore. Like you could just see him like, he wants to go to the BlackBerry and be like, come over and shoot hoops. And he like can't do that, you know?
Yeah, this is really the main reason House can't run for president, other than the 15 sex scandals that would happen.
His ability to keep the BlackBerry out of his hand for more than 45 seconds would be limiting to him, yeah.
Yeah, but I was thinking about this BlackBerry thing. So couldn't he have, like, an assistant? Like, these guys have an assistant that trails them the whole time.
Yeah, he could use, like, his buddy's BlackBerry and nobody would be the wiser.
Yeah, it would be like, if you want to email me about hoops, email one of my assistants, josh@obama.com. And then he'll just have one guy who's like his BlackBerry assistant.
It could be. He's like, one guy carries like the nuclear codes to launch a nuclear strike, and the other guy carries the BlackBerry. They're with him at all times.
The BlackBerry guy would be like, hey, Barack, the commissioner in your fantasy football league just emailed you. You got to make changes by tonight at 8. Don't forget to put a new wide receiver in. Andre Johnson's on a bye week.
We got to drop Plaxico Burress. Turns out he got suspended, right?
Yeah, it's weird. It's like a human experiment to have this modern guy in the presidency it's such an old institution, you know? It like
right.
definitely hasn't moved with the times.
Yeah,
like, to not have a BlackBerry is amazing to me. How can you not have a BlackBerry and be the president?
I know. It's weird. I mean, they have, like, secure phone lines where the president – I mean, I was watching a thing about Air Force One the other day, a documentary the other night, and they had this thing about how, like, they have secure phone lines and, like, the Air Force One is in the air and the president can contact anybody he wants, and it's completely, like, there's no way they can, you know, anybody can break into it or tap into it. Like, couldn't it be the same thing for some super secret BlackBerry, you know?
You would think. You would think, and if they did, I would like to purchase one.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you'd think they could encrypt it a certain way. And how much money has BlackBerry made? Like, they couldn't, like, spend an extra $1 million to figure this out for the new prez?
Yeah, you'd think they could get involved in that somehow. Maybe boys are working on that in the lab as we speak, and maybe he has one, and they just have to tell everybody he can't use it, so throw everybody off the trail, you know?
I really want to know about his smoking, too, because I'm convinced when he gets into the White House, they have that nice balcony where you can kind of step out on the master bedroom and look out in Washington. You know he's going to want to smoke a butt on that balcony.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely, especially the pressures of the job, and you don't have, like, a minute to yourself, you know?
I mean, I want to smoke a butt on that balcony. And I'm not even the president. I can't even imagine. There can't be a better balcony to have a cigarette.
No, you get to see the Washington Monument and the Lincoln Memorial. I mean, yeah, it's ridiculous. They had a thing the late Tim Russert talked about once when he was talking about, I don't know if it was Bill Clinton or George Bush, and he's like, you know, like if you're the president every day, you don't get like a day off, like even your weekends, like you have to get up, you have to like shave 99% of the time, you have to like put on a suit.
Yeah.
Like there's not like a day you can just like sort of hang out and lay around and watch football on the couch.
Well, Obama's going to change that.
He's going to get briefs and everything, though. He's going to have stuff to do, you know?
Yeah, on Sundays during NFL season, he's told people he doesn't want to be bothered. He's got the package. He's got a couple TVs. He's ready to go.
Let Joe Biden and Hillary handle things if anything comes up.
Yeah. You know, that would have been interesting. That was one of my favorite wrinkles when everybody was arguing about the presidency and who would get it and what would happen. But the guy who I forget where I read it. Somebody wrote this thing about if Hillary became president, you had to factor in, like, it would take her 45 minutes to an hour to get ready every morning. And that would be part of her presidential thing. Like, and you think about that, and it's like, that's like a serious disadvantage for any female politician.
Right, right.
You basically have to get up an hour earlier than your male counterpart.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Because, you know, we're guys. You throw on a suit. Maybe you shave.
Right, yeah.
15 minutes tops, you're ready to go.
Right, right.
And for
no makeup,
president,
no fancy hairdo or anything, yeah.
You probably let's talk about the Yanks.
Okay.
Actually, first of all, I'd like to congratulate our 5'9" MVP and the recipient of a $40 million contract extension, Mr. Dustin Pedroia.
Well, sure, yeah. Congratulations.
I'll sing you a little song, actually.
A little Dusty.
Here's a little song for you.
All right.
Dustin Pedroia, Dustin Pedroia. Is that funny? Is that funny
that
stuff?
That is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
That is the funniest thing I've ever said.
That is hilarious.
It's so funny. So
Pedroia.
Freaking funny.
The Hava Nagila song was just brilliant. That's good writing.
So what do you think?
About the Yanks?
Yeah.
Well, last week I was talking with some guys at work about it, and I've already locked out of the 2009 playoffs. I mean, I have no faith whatsoever in Cashman. And every time I think about this, like I was thinking about it the other day, it was around this time last year that I was all excited for the winter meetings, and I would go on to like the Minnesota Tribune or whatever the Minneapolis newspaper is and read like Lavelle Neal III for updates about Santana.
Remember how much workplace productivity was displaced during the Johan Santana sweepstakes?
I often, like, I don't really sleep that great, so if I'll wake up in the middle of the night sometimes, and a year ago I would get on like the internet and I would get on like the Laverne Neal, whatever his name is, the columnist for the Twins on the Minneapolis Star Tribune website, and read like the latest Santana rumors, because I really wanted Johan Santana so badly on the Yankees, and I was crushed by that, and it still continues to crush me, because I will go to my grave, hopefully many, 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 many years from now, still saying, no matter what else happens, they should have freaking traded for Johan Santana.
I agree. Phil Hughes.
And now they're paying the freaking price for that, because Phil Hughes and Ian Kennedy, it turns out, royally suck. And so now we have to overpay, like grotesquely overpay, for CC Sabathia, who is like one half to two thirds the pitcher that Johan Santana is,
and not even remotely clutch in any playoff situation so far,
and can't ever beat the Red Sox, which nobody seems to remember was murdered by them in the playoffs when they played 2 years ago. Awful against them historically. He weighs 460 pounds. And is not going to be getting any slimmer and any younger, and they're going to be paying him a fortune. So having said that, do I want him to sign with them? Of course, because I'd rather he be their number one starter than Wong.
Right.
And they need another guy, but they're going to have to grossly overpay for him. And the fact that they made this offer, weren't we together a couple weeks ago for my bachelor party, and then around the time they made this offer of $140 million? And it's now 3 weeks later, and he's still, like, contemplating it, which means he has no desire to play in New York because he wants to play out in California. So we're going to grossly overpay for a guy who's grossly overweight and has no desire to play in New York. Ooh.
A lot of grosslies.
A lot of grosslies. It makes me feel grossly. I mean, it's ridiculous. Now, I read today online that the likelihood is that he's going to sign with the Yankees because apparently the Angels thing, that was just, like, a feint to convince Teixeira that they were going in a different direction, which they really weren't. But his heart is in California. His heart is also in the National League.
Where's he from?
He's from, like, the San Francisco area.
Oh.
And they said that his wife wants him to pitch for the Giants. But the Giants, thankfully, were burned on Barry Zito to the tune of $1.37. They're not that eager to throw another $1.40 down the hole, you know.
Would you frame, if you were Brian Sabian, the Giants GM, would you frame Barry Zito for a murder, or would you at least think about it?
I definitely, absolutely would. I mean, if you think about it.
There's ways to frame people. Like, you could definitely, like, have him take some girl home some night and then just hire, cost like $500,000, hire some dude.
Absolutely.
That'll be it. And then you've rebuilt your franchise.
And it turns out that was not just the worst contract in sports, but that was like the worst contract ever signed in any field of human endeavor.
Well, but the thing that pushed it over the top was that when they signed him to that contract, everybody was like, this is one of the worst contracts ever signed in the history of sports, and then it became worse somehow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why the Yanks are going to be on the hook for $1.40 to CeCe, because he set the market at $1.37. He was bidding against himself.
But at least CeCe had a good year last year,
and
maybe you could argue that, I don't know if you'd say peaking, but he's definitely like in his prime or whatever. Zito, just, you know, you could see it watching him. He just wasn't as good as he was before, and he was headed in the wrong direction.
There were a lot of
warning signs. So weird. Yeah, there really were.
You were making fun of me at the time because, you know, the Yanks were going to get a pick there, and you were like, please let them sign Zito, please.
Oh, my God. I was begging for it. Hey, back to Laverne Neal for a second.
Laverne Neal III, I think, yeah.
Laverne Neal III. Do you think, like, that, like, from, like, mid-November to late December last year, all of a sudden, he was doing like this insane traffic for the Star Tribune site.
Undoubtedly.
And the editor was like, hey, we've got to lock up Laverne Neal III. This guy's a cash cow right now.
Right.
Hey, they should have gotten a sponsor for him.
They should have. Because I was going to it like daily, on a daily
hourly basis. I was too.
Checking to see the latest rumors.
I was too. Well, here's as a Red Sox fan, here's what I don't want you to do.
Okay.
So hopefully the Yankees are the opposite of this. I don't want you to get texts.
Right.
I don't want anybody to get texts. Texts is like my worst nightmare for... my worst nightmare is the Yankees re-signing texts and then signing Manny.
Yeah.
And because Vlad Guerrero's only got a year left, and then either shopping Vlad Guerrero or just keeping him for that last year. But the thought of a text Manny 3-4 or a Manny text 3-4, however it goes, that would just be terrifying.
Yeah.
And I can't think of anything more terrifying than that.
One of the underrated things and that nobody really looks at is that the problem the Yankees had last year was offensively. It really was not pitching. I know they didn't have an ace, but they knitted together a starting lineup because they got
more
bullpen than ever expected out of Messina, and they had a good bullpen. Their offense couldn't get a clutch hit to save their life. They were old and slow offensively, and now they are going to have Nick Swisher play first. And the rumor is that they're going to have, like, Brett Gardner as the center fielder, who's going to bat about .210. He's going to have put Veritechi and numbers up. So their offense is going to be weaker. I don't understand why they don't have any interest in Teixeira, who allegedly wears number 23 because he idolized Don Mattingly growing up. And allegedly wanted to be a Yankee. I don't understand why they're not throwing the bank at him. Like, if you get him and CeCe, I understand you need to have a frontline guy, an ace. And if you have a rotation of CeCe, Wong, Jabba, Phil Hughes, and somebody, that's not awful. It's not bad. But they have to have more offense, especially if Brett Gardner is going to be their everyday center fielder.
They should sign Tex, and then instead of signing CeCe, I would save about $90 million and sign Derek Lowe, who will probably give them most of the same stats. Those would be the two moves I am afraid they will make.
Derek Lowe scares me, though, because, I mean, the thing is, like, it's a good year to be a free agent pitcher because, I mean, Derek Lowe and A.J. Burnett are, like, grossly overhyped because they're free agents. But
Derek Lowe's done it, though. I mean,
yeah,
he's come through.
I know. He's done it in the National League, and he did it years ago in the AL East. I understand that, but,
He's clutch. I don't know. I just feel like that guy, at least I know what I'm getting with him. And you're a sinker baller. You're not going to, like, lose your stuff when you're 36. But Burnett just seems to me like somebody that is like a better version of Pavano.
Oh, yeah. He's the
you just get murdered by him. Yeah. He's
no
a little
question.
Better. Like, his, you know, Pavano had really only done it 1 year.
And the only guy that Burnett seems to own is the Yankees. I mean, he pitches great against them, and then everybody else, he's kind of like mediocre. And he was, you know, he's really banged up. I mean, really banged up. So,
well, if this was, if Hank is really like mid-80s George, the moves will be Sabathia for a hugely overrated or overpriced contract, And then I think he offers Pedro like 1 year, $15 million.
Oh my God! Don't even joke about that.
No, no, I'm not kidding. 1985 George would have absolutely gotten Pedro.
Yeah,
absolutely, 100%. And would have been convinced that it would have killed the Red Sox fans somehow.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. My goal for this is I mean, after I've just bashed them, I would like them to get CC, I guess. I would really like them to get Teixeira. That would really, like, excite me if they had, like, a bat at first base. That would really excite me. And they have the money to do it with the new stadium. I mean, you know, the Steinbrenner of old, if Hank or Hal were, like their father of old, they would be just throwing money around liberally. Like, they'd have a press conference, and it would be, like, Manny, Teixeira, and CeCe all in pinstripes. And the rest of the world would, like, rip its head off because they'd be so bummed out that the Yankees threw, like, $450 million throughout the offseason.
Well, they got the new stadium money.
Gammons would write articles about how it was the death of baseball, and, you know, everybody would be outraged, and, you know, Boston would have, like, a period of mourning. It would be fantastic.
Nah, we really wouldn't.
Yeah, you know, they'd be, like, beating their chests and lamenting, oh, the Yankees just buy everything and yada, yada, yada.
We just care about the Devil Rays now. That's what we measure ourselves up against. And I continue to use Devil. I don't care. You guys can all screw up.
They're just the Rays now, Bill. They're not
the Devil. They're the Devil Rays to me. You can't change your name 15 years into it. But that's the team I think that all the Red Sox fans are looking at and eyeing and keeping track of.
That's hurtful.
Listen, I'm just being honest.
No, I think it's true. You don't have to, the Yankees thing is done. You don't have to worry about the Yankees.
Well, it's
anymore.
Not done, but I don't think it can be turned around in 1 year. I think it's a 3-year process, and a lot of it depends on what you get out of Phil Hughes and whether he's legitimate or not. And as somebody who had him on my fantasy team last year, I can tell you there weren't a lot of signs.
No.
His last start of the season was pretty good.
No, he's grossly overrated.
No, it's like the Clay Buchholz thing.
Right.
Clay Buchholz has been living off that no-hitter for over a year. Mm-hmm. But at some point during these games, you actually have to show why you're this highly rated guy.
At least he has an actual no-hitter, because Phil Hughes was living off an almost no-hitter until he, like, ripped his hamstring apart or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
he had,
watch
like,
that
a seven-inning no-hitter, and then he, like, shattered himself. And then he, like, you know, he's another one with these freak injuries and, like, broken ribs, pitching, and, I don't expect great things from him.
That's a huge thing, though, when you talk about pitching prospects. Like, how durable are they? And Hughes has already gotten hurt twice in 2 years.
Right. And then there was that thing about, like, he was wearing glasses because then they thought he couldn't see very well. That's not a good sign. And the guy that's supposed to be, like, the, you know, next Roger Clemens or the next ace, that he's, like, blind and breaks a rib.
He seems like kind of a knucklehead.
Yeah.
Because I feel the same way about Buchholz. Like, I just would sell, there's been rumors that the Sox are trying to trade for one of the Texas catchers. And
Or
Teagarden. And there's rumors, you know, Buchholz or Masterson. It's like, if they freaking trade Masterson over Buchholz, I'm going to go crazy.
Yeah, but Texas might be smart enough to put a gun to their head and be like, we're not interested in Buchholz.
Yeah, but
it has to be Masterson.
Not trading Masterson. That guy came through in big spots. Like, you don't trade a guy like that.
What are they going to do about the captain? Are they going to run the captain out of town?
Oh, my Lord.
Three years for the cap?
My first piece of advice would be to take back the C.
Really?
Would be move number one. Now, I think, you know, look, if you look at the decade, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, the last decade. I don't know if you need a decent hitting catcher to win the World Series.
That's
so
true.
I mean, it's like catching, for whatever reason, it just doesn't seem to matter. You can win with any crappy platoon as long as they're good defensively.
The Angels won with a Molina.
Yeah, and look at
the
Philly guys.
Yeah.
Carlos Ruiz and Chris Costey, whatever his name is.
Right. But he's your captain. So he's great, calls a great game. Good as a pitching staff. That's what I always read in the Boston Globe.
He should be getting $4 million a year for 2 years would be the most I think he deserves. But I'm much more worried about David Ortiz.
David Ortiz, Big Poppy.
Big Poppy.
You think he could be on the downside of the hill?
Well, look, the last 2 years have not been encouraging. In 2007, he was basically terrible until with 6 weeks to go in the season, really turned it on. He's limping around. He's hitting like .257 at one point. And then last year, you know, banged up, looked terrible in the playoffs, really didn't look good all season. I don't know if we've seen the best of him. It feels like maybe we have. That's not good.
Big Poppy. No, I know. And he's with no Manny,
And well, that's my point.
Not the big poppy of old.
You got the Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid, Mr. Fuji, Mr. Saito, Chest Rockwell, Brock Landers tag team.
Right.
And now Manny's gone, and Ortiz isn't really Ortiz anymore. That was kind of the foundation of what the Red Sox were built on.
Right, right.
I don't know if I really like the new foundation of all these gritty, hard-fighting guys who get so tense in a Game 7 that they get three hits.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good. I like the loosey-goosey Red Sox. I liked having like the special needs guys like Johnny Damon on the team.
This is what they need. Where's Kevin Millar? Maybe they can bring him back.
Stuff bounced right off him. They were like Super Balls. Just bouncing off
him. Pressure. They were doing shots of JD or whatever and ready to go.
Yeah, I'm really convinced like that's a better way to go in the city of Boston because everyone cares too much and the Red Sox mean too much and it's so, especially in October, it's just life or death every day and I don't think you can have 25 Dustin Pedroias and Kevin Youkilis.
Yeah, a little. I think you need a couple. Burned out.
Yeah, you need a couple wacky guys.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. Let's hope they don't find any.
You don't really care. You care about your team.
I hate the Red Sox with every fiber of my being. When they came back from 8-0 or whatever that game was, that was like one of the worst things ever.
Yeah, but you were excited when young David Price came in and shut us down.
I was excited in Game 7, but I had absolutely no faith that they'd be able to do that. And it's sad that I have to live vicariously through the Rays now. Like, that's what I've sunk to as a Yankee fan, you know? But you know, that's what I've sunk to, so what can I tell you?
I enjoyed that everybody who was really rooting for the Frisky Rays to make the World Series and not having the Red Sox be in, then were treated to one of the worst World Series ever.
Yeah, just
awful. There you go, folks.
Well, hope you enjoyed it.
Hey, James Shields, woohoo!
Major League Baseball is going to have some kind of a rule where, like, the Yankees or Red Sox have to be prominently involved from here on in, you know, for your interest.
That might have been the worst. I mean, when you add up all the factors from the announcers to the matchup, to the fact that Tampa was so just happy to be there and burned out, and then all the rain delays, the late start times. I got to call that the worst World Series ever. No offense to the Philly fans. We're all happy you won. I'm just saying, like, as a neutral, objective fan.
Oh, yeah. It was abysmal.
I take nothing from that series. I have no memory of it other than the rain.
Teams with no, like, overarching national interest whatsoever. Like, there's nobody in Missouri getting excited about a Phillies-Rays World Series, you know?
Well, and then the other thing is, to have a World Series in such a ludicrous stadium like Tampa.
Oh.
Like that, like, what is it called? The Tropicana Dome or whatever. It just didn't feel like October. Like, it didn't feel like the World Series, you know?
No, it was outrageous.
It felt like, I don't know, like arena baseball. Some sort of gimmick sport.
It really did.
I
know this is the lament and this is like the easy thing and you sound like some cranky old sports writer, but they start these games too freaking late. I mean, we don't need 8:30 starts. Can you start the game at 7 o'clock or 7:30? Somebody had a good point. Like, people on the West Coast would miss the first couple innings, but everybody at least could watch the end of the game. Isn't it better that you miss a little bit in the beginning rather than missing the end?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I remember writing about this like 6-7 years ago and predicting that the next generation of baseball fans would really not exist because they would have no memories like we had of watching these day World Series games. And, you know, the 1978 playoff game happened at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like, you know, Fisk homer, I guess, was at midnight, but that game was 12th inning.
Yeah, really late.
But I just didn't see how this next generation of fans would be there. Like, if you're 9 years old right now, do you even get into baseball? I don't know.
I mean, I kept saying this year when the Yankees were eliminated from the playoffs, I was like, well, at least I can go to bed early. I don't have to stay up late and watch these games because, you know, the Yankees and the Red Sox played, you know, in 03 or 04 afterwards, and it's like, you know, the games go on for 5 hours. It's 12:30 in the morning. You're like, just let this thing be over, you know? A nine-inning game takes forever because every pitch is like a war, so they can't start these games that late.
Who would you have as the World Series announcers if you could pick any two guys?
For baseball, guys?
Other than us.
Can we do it? It's a hard question to ask now in December because we're so far removed from baseball, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a Yankee fan. I like John Sterling and, you know, his over-the-top Yankee homerism, but that wouldn't sell for the public.
Would you do a two-man booth or a three-man booth?
Well, three is probably too many. It proves to be too many for football, certainly.
I think the best two guys, and they're never together except on the radio, and I'm not just saying this because it's ESPN, John Miller and Rick Sutcliffe together are really good.
John Miller's good. I've never heard him on the radio. Sutcliffe is good. I've heard Sutcliffe with other play-by-play guys on ESPN.
And they're never
baseball games, but
yeah, their potential hasn't been tapped with the partners they've been given. I'm trying to be nice,
right?
But I think together they'd be really good. And I also like when they have the third guy in there who's a real player.
Yeah,
kind of knows his place.
Guy.
Remember like Al Leiter a couple years.
Mm. Al Leiter's surprisingly not bad.
He's pretty good.
David Cohn wasn't bad on some Yankee games too. Now I'm obviously very Yankee centric, but David Cohn was pretty good. And you know, Ron Darling and Keith Hernandez are both pretty good.
I thought Ron Darling was good. I wasn't as enamored with Buck Martinez, but
no, not Buck Martinez. Keith Hernandez.
I'm saying Ron Darling did the baseball playoffs, which you probably block out of your mind because the Yankees were involved.
No, on CBS he was good though, Ron Darling.
Yeah, he also had. I got so many different emails about who he sounded like.
Oh, really?
People seem to agree, like, it was probably James Woods. But,
really?
Yeah, because he had that kind of weird husky, not husky, but kind of a little bit deep, that New York-y type of way. I got a whole bunch of things about it. It was pretty funny.
And I'm trying to replay his voice in my head to see if that's accurate. That's pretty good. Well, I kind of like Keith Hernandez, too, because Keith Hernandez is kind of like the Johnny Miller of baseball, where he's, like, not afraid to throw players under the bus. Because a lot of these guys, like, you know,
he's led a good life.
What's that?
He's led a good life.
Yeah, exactly.
The camera shows, like, Suzanne Summers in the stands, and Keith saying, hey, haven't seen her since 1980.
Exactly.
Hot tub party. Oof.
Right. Keith has done some things, and he just doesn't care, you know? So, right, he doesn't care.
Keith has some memories.
He does. He certainly does. That's true.
He's Keith Hernandez.
That's right.
He was the MVP in 1979. I like him, too. I heard him on a Mad Dog Russo show.
Oh, really?
And about a month ago, and he had some really good points about what he thought the Mets should do. And he really thought they should re-sign Pedro for 1 year because he just thought he was crucial for chemistry. And he thought they should trade Beltran, which I thought was kind of a ballsy statement.
Wow. He was like their best player last year.
He doesn't like the chemistry in the team.
He'd be an intriguing center fielder for the Yanks.
He made one point. He said, I think we need more white guys who could smoke. It's very controversial.
Is that what he really said?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. Really? I was like, what? I don't think I would have read about that in the papers.
You know the famous story after he made the first or second out in the ninth inning of Game 6 at Shea?
No.
He was in the clubhouse smoking a cig during the comeback. He missed the whole thing.
Really?
Yeah. He made it out. He went back in the clubhouse. He lit a cigarette and was just kind of in there being bummed out and thinking about the off season.
Well, that's the other one. The other famous story is that Kevin Mitchell thought they were out of it, and he was like,
yeah, he was in there
shower.
Too. Yeah.
He'd like taken all his clothes off, and then they were like, they were frantically screaming for him because they were going to pinch hit him. And he like came out and he like just put his pants on, like he had nothing underneath there.
He had no cup.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The Red Sox should have come a little inside on the pitch. He'd have backed out like you're crazy.
That would have been a funny subplot to that game, the highlights, if Kevin Mitchell was swinging like a grandfather clock. Vince Vince Scully was trying to announce. It's like, did you ever see that Converse ad with Larry Bird and Magic Johnson?
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, the MVP, I'm the three-time MVP, and Magic gets out of the limo and he rips off his jogging pants.
Yeah.
It just chaos ensues for a split second. It's like, oh, my God, no! My God, no! It's great. I highly encourage everyone to YouTube it. A reader had alerted it to me like 2 years ago.
Really?
There's a split second of just, you don't know what's going on.
Jeez.
It's like the bag that Jake the Snake Roberts used to bring in the ring. Anyway, well, this is a freewheeling conversation
intended
for mature subjects.
Hey, there you go. You know, you've been warned.
Johnny, I will see you this weekend.
Excellent.
Very excited for the wedding.
Excellent. Me too.
Very excited to see you. And are you going away after, or are you sticking around?
No, we're just taking a couple days off, but no immediate honeymoon.
Just hanging out watching Deadwood?
Exactly. Well, there's no more Deadwood to watch, sadly, but we'll find something else.
What are you watching now?
The Mad Men's over now too. For the Mad Men's on hiatus or whatever. So
Railroad Road Rules is done.
You know what I've kind of gotten into now, and I'm about 3 years behind. I've only watched the repeats on TBS, but it's the show The Office.
Oh.
People always told me like, you should watch The Office, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. And then I don't know. I flipped onto it. They have played the repeats now, And I've really gotten into it. I think it's really like it's a good show. It's funny.
Jacko recommends The Office.
With a thumbs up on The Office. One of these days I'm going to get the energy to like actually get the DVDs and like watch it from the beginning, but.
Yeah, I have a whole things I would do if I didn't have two kids list.
Right.
And right up there near the top is plow through DVDs of 30 Rock and The Office.
Yeah, I watched the 30 Rock.
30
like
Rock's
a month
good.
Ago, and it was really funny. Like Alec Baldwin was hilarious. So I was like, yeah, I should watch The Office too. But yeah, it's one of those things. Like you were always after me because I didn't watch The Sopranos, and you're like, you should watch The Sopranos. And it was, you know, it was like in its fourth or fifth year. It was like the final year. I never watched The Sopranos, and I'm like, what am I going to, like, quit my job and, like, start 5 years worth? Now that it's winter, I guess, now I can just go get the DVDs, and it's snowing, and we can watch
You know
the
what,
DVDs,
though?
You know,
but that Sopranos thing was different because you weren't watching it just because you were trying to hurt me. It had nothing to do with whether you wanted to see it or not. It had become your stubborn only child from Irish descent, and
right. And
you just put your foot in the sand, and you just weren't going to give me the satisfaction of watching it.
Right.
That's what it came down to.
And now when it just ended by fading to black and nobody knew what happened, I don't regret my choice. I have to say it was the right call.
I got to say, I think our friend Sal, I think if he had to do it over again, knowing that it was going to end with the fade to black, I think he would have not watched those 80 hours.
There you go. See, I'm ahead of the game. So.
That stinks that you know how it ends.
Yeah, I watched the last one. Like, I watched the last 5 minutes because I'm like, you know, the build-up and the hype, I'm like, I want to see if he gets whacked or whatever, you know? So, although I had nothing emotionally invested in the show in any way, shape, or form, but I'm like, I want to see how it ends. And then I'm like, I thought my cable blew out or something. I was like, what? What happened there?
Well, you should, I'm going to say this for the fifth straight year. You should just rent season one and watch the first four.
Yeah, I'll get, you know.
Just watch the first four and see if it grabs you. It's so good.
Right. Right,
that,
right.
I recommend that, and I recommend Tuesday night's NBA TV, Ahmad, C-Web, and GP.
I read your mailbag about that. It sounds
so
hilarious.
Good.
You should keep
that
secret, though, before Stern finds out what's going on. So.
Well, it might have ended last night because GP was joking about Leol Deng.
Yeah.
And about how bad he's been, and he was talking about how he robbed the Bulls.
Yeah.
And C-Web goes, did he have a mask on or did he not have a mask? And GP goes, no, he didn't even have a mask. He didn't even have a gun. He just went in there with his finger in his pocket. He just robbed him. Because Luol Deng said the $70 million contract. He's
right.
Been terrible.
Yeah.
I was rolling. I was laughing so hard. And then they have Ahmad Rashad in there who, like, only knows maybe 50 guys in the league at this point.
Because Jordan doesn't play anymore.
So he's like, DJ Augustin.
Oh, God.
He's doing getting a lot of that.
A lot
so
of
it's
names
great.
Wrong.
Yeah, I recommend that. Anyway, all right, I'll see you this weekend. Good luck with the wedding.
Thanks very much, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Target the channel. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.